You see, the thing is that what Jeremy Corbyn's doing is saying things need to be different. We need more democracy. For example, academisation of schools. There's no evidence that academies give better education. There's a lot of evidence that it makes it worse. All right? So let's take the market out of schools. Now, if you do that, then let's take the market out of transport. Mm-hmm. Let's take the market out of health. Now, this is where the Tories are at. They want all-out neoliberal policies, the free market to run rampant right through everything, so there's no facet of human behaviour where somebody isn't making a cut out of it. Well, Corbyn says no. Now, you see, if you get a vote for Corbyn, even just, if it's just a vote for parliamentary seats, where Corbyn stands on a ticket which says, we want an end to the privatisation of the NHS. Actually, we want to take back some of the things. We want to renationalise the railways. Now, he does say let's renationalise the railways, doesn't he?
Yeah.
So let's vote for renationalising the railways. Now, the problem is, for you know, this argument about reform and revolution, which I've been part of for years, is at certain moments, little things become revolutionary demands. In 1917, the Russian Revolution started by women, workers, who were advised not to go and have a demonstration, but they said, there's a bread crisis, we're going to go and have a demonstration about bread, we're going to go picket the factories, we're going to get people out. Yeah? Now, it was a reformist demand. I want to feed my kids, that's a reform. It wasn't calling for revolution. But the thing is, at that moment in time, with war against Germany, the Russian state said, it's a reform you can't have. You know, your children have got to die. We have to have a war against Germany. And this is where we're at with capitalism. I mean, I think that if you look at the mountain of uninvested income, the mountain of domestic personal debt that working class people have, to make the economy work, you have to take down that uninvested capital, which is in Panama, and you have to put it into working class bank accounts. That means you have to tackle to make capitalism work, you have to tackle that inequality. That dynamic which is sucking wealth out of working class people up towards 0.1%. Now, any small step you do which confronts the process, that people like Cameron, they're biting them, you know, they're going crazy because they're thinking, well, just a minute, where's this going to end? If you start diverting, you know, if rich people have to pay tax and working people have to pay less tax, if there's going to be money from the idle rich to go to keeping people on with better benefits, that's a process. You know, where's that going to stop? And I think that you know, I think you're very pessimistic. I think Corbyn represents something which is really exciting, and if he didn't, all this nonsense about anti-Semitism and all these wild accusations about Jeremy Corbyn, this Jeremy, what was it the Telegraph produced? If he lives to be 100. He will have cost the British taxpayer so many million pounds.
He's already received £3 million of taxpayers' money.
Yeah. And if he lives to be 100, he'll... I don't know. I mean, when you stoop to that level of journalism, you have to say, your side is in the middle. It's just one thing. I'm sorry to go on. But listen, hey, on that thing about Brexit as well, I mean, do you know what I think about working-class people wanting to come out of Europe? All these posh Oxbridge boys saying it's going to be the end of the world if you vote to come out of Europe. Working class people saying, I don't believe you, I'm going to come out. I think it's about working class people shaping their own destiny. It might be not articulate. It might be a kind of elemental response to this nonsense that we're living through. But I think working class people are going to vote massively for Brexit. And you shouldn't think that they're in with Farage and Boris Johnson and the rest of it. They're not. The working class people look at Cameron and say, you Tory, get your foreign Armageddon.
Just on Brexit, as far as I can see, what will happen is nothing will change because they'll have to sign up a free trade deal with Europe one way or another. They'll have to sign up a free movement of workers deal one way or another. And in fact, in or out, it's not going to make a blind bit of difference. In fact, so that's why, you know, it doesn't really matter which way. You know, like you say, it's a perfect protest vote because it will annoy a lot of very rich people if we came out, because they would have to spend a lot of time getting back into the common market because WTO terms will not be to their liking. I was just going to try and move the conversation on a bit. I remember I was having a conversation with someone about what happened, hazy memories of when Southwest trains were privatised. And apparently that was the time that they ended dues check-off in those. And that ended up actually rebounding on them, because that strengthened the RMT, because the RMT officers had to go around and collect the dues again. And B, have the kind of... it was a train driver I was talking to, but they basically it reinvigorated the union. There is an element of, and a question of, the extent to which the various state things like grievance procedures and all, your right to be a company, that people see trade unions very much as an insurance policy. I went along representing someone, and he was astonished to discover how I worked at the same place as him. He thought he was getting himself a lawyer. hardly disappointing for the poor lamb. And I did my best impression of Perry Mason asking questions in the disciplinary hearing, but that didn't work so well. But there is an element, particularly that this is Unison, so particularly in a widespread organisation of office workers, were quite hard to organise. And just on academy schools, from what I've been seeing, trade unions have been picking off the academy schools, because now instead of being part of national pay bargaining, each school or each school chain is on its own. The NUT are just swooping down and going, right, well, these are the terms we want for our staff here. So there's possibly an incentive on the because they're trying to break up the employers, that the big unions can start picking off small employers because they're getting out of national bargaining. But it's just a merry-go-round on the same process that we'll keep having to fight these fights again and again and again, like the Labour's of Sisyphus, because every time we make an advance, eventually, if we succeed too well, the limit we can push our wages up to is the total limit of profits. The reality is that if we push profits up to the point at which they find it more conducive to just sack us all and employ some new people, that's the point at which they will. But if we push our take too far, they go on a capital strike. And that looks like an economic crisis. And that if they can't make their investment, that's what they hold over us. So that's the point at which, like you say, a friend in front of here says, I say that sort of thing for the tape, when demands start becoming actually structural rather than simply just a bread and butter day to day issue, at the point at which they actually would break the system. And what we've seen in the past, everyone always talks about the 1970s and how it was greedy trade unions, but it wasn't greedy trade unions. It was just that there was a tight labour market. Unions did what they had to do, push wages up as far as they could, and then an economic crisis came along, partly because there wasn't enough profitability, and that created the pool of unemployment and structural lack of investment that continues to this day.
Just maybe add to a couple of them points. The Southwest Trains, I think that was Connex. I think Connex took over that as a private company. And doing away with check-off, the first example we had of that was actually still under British Rail, where they gave, under the agreement for check-off, they were able to give 6 months' notice and pull out. And they pulled out on the whole of British Rail with the RMT, because the RMT were taking action, which gave us a bit of a tip-off, and we then started campaigning to get as many of our members onto direct debit rather than check-off with the thing. But you're right, it did. A good friend of mine was chair of the RMT branch in Doncaster, while I was the chair of the ASLEF branch in Doncaster. It became his job to go out collecting subs off people who refused to do it by direct debit. We couldn't do it by check-off. And it did bring us back together, because when I started on railway in 79, we just signed up. In fact, my interview, there were three questions I were asked. One was, who's the chairman of the British Railways Board? The second one was, who's the General Secretary of ASLEF? And the third one was, who's the General Secretary of the NUR, as it was at that time? I only knew two of them. I didn't know who chairman of the British Railway Board was. But when you talk about academies and unions starting to pick them off because they're individual, that may well be the case. But with privatisation of British Rail, ASLEF did really well, because we have a commodity to sell. It takes a long time to train a train driver up. And we saw our salaries and our terms and conditions and quality time off grow. But that wheel's turned full circle. We now have 0 hours contracts coming into industry, train drivers who have retired and are now going to work as and when they feel like it, and undercutting drivers who that is their livelihood, you know, those things like that. It's turned full circle. We're seeing now on Southern, where I was down at the picket line on Tuesday and Wednesday, where the guards are on strike now, the conductors, because they're trying to do away with the conductors. We're balloting to support them. And they've sent, because they took a day out on strike, they've now issued them letters. They've got to tick the boxes and sign it and send it back in. They're losing the travel concessions. They're losing all kinds of things we've had for years and years. It's turning nasty. And that wheel has turned full circle. And in the rail industry, the bosses, the capitalists, are learning how to fight back against us. And we need to take a totally different stand. When you talk about the value of workers and the value of works, it makes me remind a good friend of mine, is Davey Hopper, the General Secretary of the Durham Miners. I spend a lot of time with him, and he tells me quite seriously at the time when the bosses in the pits valued a pony more than they did a man. Because if the man that did something wrong or died, they'd just go and get another one front labour market. They had to buy a pony. There was a cost there to it, literally. So things actually have changed a little bit for the better for that. But when we look at being defensive, when we look at the ballots for trade union action, I talk about within ASLEF, and you know, when they started talking about this trade union bill, we had a lot of disputes. The main one was on London Underground, which was engineered to try and get public opinion against the trade unions. There was no dispute there. We were in favour of night tubes. Cities like London should have night tubes. It's more jobs for our members, you know, we're in favour of it. But we weren't having it imposed on us, and we weren't having rosters imposed on us. We actually, they went and recruited people into job. We've kept them people, and they're now to recruit more as well. You know, we've got them all coming in onto the proper establishments, and they work their way up from being part-time on night shifts into full-time rosters and things. So we did well. But we had ballots on Northern Rail. We won it and would have smashed the threshold. We had ballots on Tyne and Wear Metro. Won it and would have smashed the thresholds. Arriva Trains Wales, we had to take action there. The only one we have, because once we'd got the ballot result, we were able to get what we wanted or stop what management were trying to do. On TransPennine Express, we had a ballot result. And I think it was on a 90% turnout, and they got, I think it was something like 92% in favour of action. And we were all shouting and bawling about that, how good it was. And later that day, the London Underground result came in, which was higher. That was something like a 92% turnout and 97% in favour of action. So you can organise Labour. They will there. They are there and they will fight. But we have to organise them. And do you know, there was a time, I've often heard it said that trade unions, and a lot of members say we're lions led by donkeys when it comes to trade union leadership. I honestly felt when I got elected to national level in 2002, I was trying to drag the membership along. And now it's turning round and they're pushing me. They're pushing me. I think it's fantastic. People are changing. There's a change in the air. There really is. And it's just fantastic. I couldn't have imagined being able to go to our membership and say to them, say, 6 years ago, management are going to come and offer us extra money to go without guards on trains, and we're going to fight it. And I couldn't imagine our members saying we'll support you on that. Now they are. They're telling us 100%. We'll see a ballot result on Southern coming in. It'll be in the 90% in favour of action to defend somebody else and turn down extra money themselves. So there's a change taking place out there. And I'd like to see the end of capitalism, but we're going to have to fight on all fronts to get it. It's not going to happen by not involving in the political process, the parliamentary process even. It's not going to happen without involving and getting involved in the trade union, the industrial process, and on the streets with people like the Freedom Riders, the People's Assembly and that. And it will happen. Like John said, there'll be something that sparks it off, but we can't just sit and wait for that spark to come. We can't sit talking in rooms like this amongst ourselves that it's going to happen. We've got to be out there fighting for what's there and the battles that are there now. And it will come. A spark will come.
Well, what do you think will happen to Tosh Whitman, basically all the enthusiasm and all that? You know, but you get the Labour Party in, you're on a landslide, and then basically capitalism pulls the rug and says, like, oh, we're going to... Labour Party comes in and we're going to reform capitalism. Capitalism starts pulling the rug, starts pulling money out. And basically of the crisis like the Mitterrand government in the early 80s in France, which is probably even more, spoken last week, on a more left-wing platform, and it led to the dissolution of like millions of people. When if you basically been saying, well, basically we can't, the Labour Party can introduce socialism, we need to be fighting for ourselves as a working class and emancipate ourselves, we shouldn't be looking to the Labour Party. Wouldn't that actually be more progressive? Well, and have a more chance of actually changing society than trying to go through the Labour Party, which is probably going to. It's disappointing.
The whole point I've been making right from the very start is we're not going to win it on one front.
No, but it's all these fronts.
And the Labour Party is part of that. It's one of those fronts we need to be fighting on. And yeah, there'll be times when we disagree, even with Corbyn as the leader. There'll be times we disagree, but that's one of the fronts we have to be fighting on. And maybe we'll have to have people inside Labour Party fighting against Corbyn on some issues in future. Wouldn't that be a good problem to have?
That'd be a bit like Mellington. When they were in the Labour Party, they got expelled. Mm-hmm. And a friend here, when talking about, broadly you were talking about nationalisation with the mines and such, mm-hmm. like, who was it made more miners redundant and closed more mines than the Conservative government? It was a Labour government up until the 70s.
Yeah, that's right.
They actually made more miners redundant and closed more mines. And the British rail, Leyland and the British car industry, what did they do? That was nationalised. It was all still for profit. It wasn't for use. It wasn't, you know, the houses that are being built should be built for people to live in, not to get a profit from. The loaf of bread that's baked should be baked for people to eat, etc. You know, the bed that's made should be a bed for people to sleep in, or whatever else is they want to do. And the thing is, success of the Labour Party and success of Labour governments never ever talk about that sort of. They don't talk about it. They do not understand what socialism's about, and that's the biggest difficulty of all. They just do not know. Their concept of socialism, in my mind, is largely nationalisation. That's what they talk about, and nationalisation has not done one iota for the working class. Not one iota.
Health service.
But what was the purpose of that? It's only so you get the working class fitter again, quicker again, get them back to work quicker. And even at that, look at the state it's in now.
You're using a criticism of the Labour Party. I'm not in the Labour Party. But historically, you're right. I mean, if you look at until Jeremy Corbyn and John McDonnell have just been very visible on picket lines supporting workers in struggle, a number of workers, not just doctors. They've gone on picket lines, they've gone on demonstrations. They've taken on the mainstream views of the British establishment. But you're using a criticism which is out of step with that. You're using a criticism of the Labour Party, not as it is at the moment. I mean, the thing is that I think that it's not good to criticise the Labour Party in terms of where it's been when you've got a completely new departure. We've never seen a leader of Her Majesty's opposition in this country, ever, in all history. You've never seen it saying, I support industrial action, I support Australia. It's never happened.
But didn't people say that, like, Clement Attlee was like the greatest leader? Attlee government basically sent the military in against the
There's never been, ever, a Labour leader who has said, I'm with the workers against the establishment. It's never happened. But that is what you've got now. You've got an anti-austerity, anti-war leader of the Labour Party. And therefore, I agree, and if you say historically the Labour Party is a pile of crap,
I think, Freddie, you must have picked up from me the twice I've been. I am not going to sit here and defend New Labour and Blair and stuff. But what we're looking at now is a qualitative change, I believe. And we've also got a Shadow Chancellor who said the other day, quite clearly, we will be on the picket lines with you. It can't be clearer than that.
Yes.
It can't be clearer than that.
I'll just add, though, I mean, you state McDonald's policies, which, you know, he's talking to this, I can't remember her name, Mariana Mazzucato or something like that. The entrepreneurial state and the sort of like ideas of a national investment bank. It's actually going back to what Ramsay MacDonald was writing about. He was exactly writing about that the state should take back the profits of its own, you know, so the money it generates should go back in taxes to the state. And that's very much the MacDonaldite agenda. So they are going back, you know, I'm going back a long way here. But and it, actually, he did, in 1917, did call for workers' and soldiers' councils around the country. So, I'm being slightly mean. But the point is that they're not this screamingly huge departure from what Labour has historically been. With all fairness and dueness to them, you know, Corbyn knows that because I've told him. and he's absolutely fully aware of where he stands. You know, maybe he, in his mind, you know, he'd rather be on the ramparts, you know, abolishing the wages system and this sort of thing. Even MacDonald said, you know, the Labour Party would institute socialism if the workers wanted it, but they didn't. So he was doing what was necessary in the time, given where the working class were at. So I think it's. Whatever you think about the Labour Party, you know, I'm more or less defending our position of not being in it and standing against it and, you know, opposing it in public, is that the key thing is the working class consciousness first and foremost. And that's absolutely key. And it's not just the fact that they're going to struggle and that they struggle, you know, in this trade union front or Freedom Riders, which are wonderful and they're absolutely the core part of the class struggle. But I think the aim for socialists certainly is to raise up to that next step of knowing it because doing it because they understand what the class struggle is and understand that how the only ways we're going to end it is through common political action to abolish the wages system. I think that's the next step up, and it's clear that someone out there needs to be clearly saying that for whatever because you know we. Whatever, you know, various historical disputes have radicalised people in the past, for every dispute that's happened to, there's been some sort of equal or opposite number of people who've been disillusioned by the result, by the inevitable failure of these sort of things.
I tell you what the big argument is this. The Labour Party is, at the end of the day, I mean, they talk to Tosh, you talk to anybody else, they won the elections. You know, he'd rather see a right-wing MP like Caroline Flint become MP rather than a UKIP MP or a Tory MP.
But also rather see somebody de-selected in Labour as a Labour Party candidate.
This is the big argument, is Corbynism will lead to the death of the Labour Party or Corbynism will lead to a new spring of life for the Labour Party. And this issue isn't going to be resolved by comparing the Labour Party of Rams and McDonald to the Labour Party of Corbyn. You have to see that any young workers who come out and say, I'll tell you what, I'm listening, it's in every paper, it's in the BBC, Night and Day, Corbyn's an anti-Semite, Corbyn's weak, Corbyn's this, Corbyn's that, and yet the Labour Party's got more members than it's ever had, and they're winning more elections more easily than they've ever done. There's a massive attack on the political establishment here, which is that you have to have an Oxbridge accent, you have to wear a nice suit, you have to speak in a certain way, right? And you have to be deferential to monarchy and Christianity and all this other stuff. And Corbyn says no. And it's proving to be more popular. It's proving to win. Now, that is an elemental part of fighting for socialism. And therefore, you know, when MacDonald and Corbyn, right, go on a picket line, we could turn them and shout, yeah, but what about Ramsay MacDonald and the Labour Party to them? Or we could say, fantastic, comrades. Here we are, joining together. This is what, you know, revolutions happen when millions of people come together. And millions of people aren't going to all be of the same view of one particular small party. Yours or mine. I'm a small party too. They're not going to be all the same view. People will come together with a mixture of views. It's a movable feast revolution. One minute for this, next minute for that. And I think voting for Corbyn and MacDonald and forgetting, for me, for the minute, I don't want to talk about Labour's history, I don't want to talk about Philip Snowden, I don't want to talk about Ramsay MacDonald. I want to talk about the Blairites who are trying to undermine Corbyn and why that is. Why are they sticking up for the Tories and why they're trying to undermine Jeremy Corbyn? Why is John Mann deliberately, knowing that the media were there, why did he attack Ken Livingstone in a horrible, violent, vicious way? Why did he do it? That's the real thing. And therefore, I mean, I thought Ken Livingstone was bumbling, to say the least, in all honesty. But I'm back with Jeremy Corbyn and Corbynism. That's what I'm for. and I'm going to see off the right wing. And I think that's what I'm inviting you people to do, is you've got to get behind Jeremy Corbyn and stop thinking Jeremy Corbyn, oh yeah, but what about Ramsay McNaughton? You've got to say, I'm behind Jeremy Corbyn. I'm fighting for a Corbyn victory. Because a Corbyn victory is a defeat for the Tory party and for the corporations that back him. That's where power is in society. It's in that 0.1%. Cameron doesn't represent political power.
He isn't going to overthrow the ruling class, though, is he?
No, but the thing is, overthrowing the ruling class with its state, with its prisons, with its army, with its judiciary, with its control over the media and everything else, it takes millions and millions of people. I think Jeremy Corbyn is playing his part in shifting the balance of power. I really and honestly do. I'm not a member of the Labour Party, but I really celebrate what he's doing.
I think I'm just going to say Matt Dotton.
Not all at once. There's so few of us we can take to see. Bill Emanuel.
Well, it was just a simple point. I mean, I realise comparisons, but I think the interesting thing about Corbyn is, in fact, how left wing he isn't. Compared to, say, yourselves, he would have fit quite, you know. He seems this ultra left radical because of how far to the right the Labour Party has drifted. And I wrote a very nice letter to the Islington Tribune saying he's just Harold Wilson warmed up. And people wrote back going, well, bring back Harold Wilson then, that's fantastic. That's he's not that far from that sort of Labour Party. You know, if you look at the policies he's proposing in detail, you know, whatever his personal style is, but in fact even Harold Wilson with his pipe and, you know, Huddersfield accent or what have you, it represented a big shift. But the point is that, like you say, these Blairites, they consciously want the market, they consciously want capitalism, they're all in favour of it, and the thing that struck me hardest listening to the leadership debate was some of them coming out and going, oh, but think of the poor people we're going to let down if we lose. And it's not about abolishing poverty or ending it, it's about using poor people and doing something for them, not about getting poor people to deliberate themselves. That's the last thing they want. And it struck me, because I'll skip that as a point. But the basic thing is that they're a bit like they want to be like the Democrats in America. They want to have the poor on their side, and they want. I think they're very struck by. Oh, the name's gone. Rawls. They're very struck by this Rawlsian notion of justice, which as long as your policy benefits the poorest most, that's a good policy. But of course, abolishing the poor doesn't or having equality isn't on the agenda. Then it's just about making sure that you have policies that are good for the poor. And that's what they believe in, and they're conscious and determined about that. And, you know, we have to accept that that's where a lot of the Labour Party full-timers and, you know, actual representatives in Parliament are at. Consciously, that's what they believe.
That's assuming Bill's finished.
I'm finished, yeah.
Are you going to carry on for work central?
Yeah, it was just to sort of even broaden it beyond that, because if you look at how capitalism is run, and notwithstanding the Labour Party and all their good intentions, because I've no doubt that the Lib Dems and the rest of them are all good intentions. You look at organisations like CND when they grew, you know, far from abolishing the bombs have got bigger and even nastier than ever before. And shelter, you know, there's this programme of reform. The housing crisis is even more critical. You know, the number of people are dying on a daily basis throughout the world because they can't get a decent drink of water, despite all the tremendous work that these volunteers, etc., are doing. The problems are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger and more and more and more grotesque. And Corbyn and the rest of them are doing, in my mind, nothing really to help that. And it's all right to say, now listen, you know, you don't want to know about McDonald's and stuff like in the past, but we need to try and learn from history. The same mistakes are getting made over and over and over again. You've got to look for a revolution. That's not to say that we shouldn't participate in the trade unions and such. I'm not suggesting that for a moment. And that we try and resist what we can. I'm not suggesting that for a moment. But the fact is that no matter how much we look at it, capitalism is getting nastier. and more divisive than ever, despite all these other good intentions that come about. And it's only getting rid of that from the social science perspective that will solve the problem on a worldwide basis, not just on some narrow what's good for Britain, and sort the rest of them.
I think you're, if you still want to contribute, Dave, you know, then I think we may as well wind up this. I think everybody's had a fair crack of a whip now. So.
I was just going to say, John went on. I mean, it's quite interesting. I remember a few years ago, I was on the lead to May Day march. And it was quite an interesting speech, to be honest. I mean, there were, it was quite funny, really. I mean, there were cops there on the bikes and stuff like this. And it was a freezing cold day, a lot of sleeting and stuff. And he made a good speech and stuff. But he was saying, like, first of all, he was starting off about the cops and things. He was on about, and he was saying, oh, of course, unlike the Thatcher government, you know, you're being treated like crap yourself, and you're now receiving them for a change yourselves and all this, you know, and you can't even take strike action and stuff, you know, we want to support your strike action and all this. And they were clapping along and quite cheering and stuff. And then he was saying, of course, we all need to be on the picket line, we need to take wildcat action, we need to do stoppages. And he says, and we shouldn't be so polite, you know, we should be more like the 19th century when we all called for mass insurrection, and then the faces dropped. It was quite hilarious to see the cops' faces drop. And then it was quite an amusing speech, but then you did kind of fortunately think, but you think, yeah, but when you're in government, I mean, you're going to be there on the picket line with us, are you really? I mean, seriously, yeah.
An answer to that, if you're asking me if I think, let's assume, and it's a big assumption, that Corbyn gets elected as Prime Minister, McDonnell stays as Chancellor, that in government I believe we will see him on picket lines. I believe that. And I've known Corbyn quite a while. I certainly known John McDonnell longer than that, and I believe we'll see him both on picket lines.
Even then, the likes of a fireman's strike,
because
that happened under the Labour government,
and
it's the government to sort it out.
That's and both Corbyn and McDonnell were supporting the firemen in that, and with the prison officers as well, when they took the right to strike from the prison officers.
Well, we may get to find out anyway with a couple of years. Right, so do you want to start the winding up? You spoke second, didn't you?
Yeah. Okay. I think it's been a fascinating discussion. I think this is he's popped the lower, but as our friend in the front said, we have to learn from the people involved in the struggles. And I think listening to Tosh at the coalface of trade union struggles and the things they face and things that he can't talk about on mic has been fascinating. And it's an example of the way in which state power is being used at this minute, and I think we're all. But I think the overwhelming thing is that we're all absolutely agreed that what's needed is a mass movement. It needs the whole population. It needs the whole world really to be thinking about and taking action for themselves to change. And it isn't about. For all we've talked about Corbyn, I think no one's actually expecting Corbyn to ride down on a white horse with a magic wand and make everything better. I think everyone is really agreed. It's about people in their homes, in their communities, in their workplaces, trying to determine how to run their own lives. And I think the only question of difference is, I think, has been about this question of the actual conscious level of support for the Labour Party, as opposed to standing aside and saying, "Well, no, there needs to be a group of us communicating." I think that's one thing I wrote down: communicating that we need. There are people out there who think that we need to do something different. I think that's part of one of the toolkits, apparently, of the totalitarian playbook is isolating people, make them think that there's no one else out there who thinks like you do. There's no one else out there who wants what you want, and that's how they can manage to control and keep populations out. And so, just to turn around and say, well, look, no, there are some people here who don't not only think that the way the society is run is wrong, that we need to fight back against it, but that we have an alternative vision, a positive way forward. And I think that that's one thing that I think even Corbyn has to play down as he tries to be practical, reasonable, moderate, and even still gets attacked for wanting to pursue bubbles, as Dan Jarvis put it. And I think finally, just to say, I mean, the lesson of the doctors' strike and of the prison officers. The whole business of taking track is because we are not slaves, and if they take away our capacity to strike, that if they take away our right to strike, if they try and strike at that, then that is what we become. And all else aside, that is the thing we have to remember the most. Thank you.
Yeah, just in winding up, again, thanks for inviting me, and it's been a pleasure to come and discuss the different policies amongst the left, shall we say. And it's one thing I do want to say about the cops taking strike action. You know, the Garda went to the European Court of Human Rights, the federation that represents the Garda, went to the European Court of Human Rights 2 years ago and won the right to take strike action. Now, a colleague of mine was the my equivalent in the British Transport Police Federation. They call him a chair rather than a president. And I sent him an email with a judgment on, saying, you know, we might end up on same side at picket line in the very near future. And anyway, I think he was, I'll tell you the other bit when the microphone's off on that. But you know, the things that are happening, one thing that's not been discussed, and I think it's where we're the movement is missing a big chance, is on age discrimination. Because age discrimination is a great thing, but again, we're getting it abused by the establishment, be that the establishment at Labour Party, the establishment at the Tory Party, or the trade union movement, if you like. And that's the thing, when they did away with the default retirement age of 65, then we've fought in ASLEF to introduce employee-justified retirement age. We've got it on Virgin West Coast, we've got it in DB Schenker, the main freight operator, and we've got it coming in Freightliner Evyol and Freightliner Intermodal. And you know what? We've got people who've worked in an industry all their lives where there's a good pension, they can retire in dignity, being encouraged to take the pension and keep working. They take a vastly reduced pension and they keep working. In the scheme of things, normally, you would work and draw a salary, pay into a pension. You'd finish working, you'd draw a pension, and you'd usually get a lump sum. You could pay off any debts that might be there. I know we want to do away with market altogether, but you'd pay your debts away, what were there, and your salary would be replaced by your pension. We've got people now who can't afford to retire in the 60s because they got to stage who are tempted to take the pensions and keep working. That's in the gift of the employer. Nobody has a right to do it, only the employer can give you the gift. It's vastly reduced when you take it. You've, at 55 years of age or whatever, you've not got a full pension anyway, and when you reach retirement age and you have to finish, you don't get a better pension. It stays at that crap pension, and it's all about keeping us and working us right to the end until the death. And what we had an item up at the TUC last year, and we're proud of what we did. We got a lot of criticism from it, from National Pensioners Convention, from the TUC in general, but we got it through with reservations. And what we were saying is, we support the National Pensioners Convention. We have our own retired members section. We've had it for 16 years now in ASLEF. But people who are at the older end of age spectrum have worked, have belonged to trade unions who look after retired members, have got a home, a roof over their head. When you look at the younger end of age spectrum, there is nothing. If they're lucky, they've had a job with 0 hours contracts and no trade unions to join and look after them. They've not been able to get any kind of afforded housing, whether it's rented or get onto a ladder. They have absolutely nothing and nobody looking for them. And all of us on the left need to start looking after the younger people in society, the people that Corbyn is instilling confidence in and getting excited about where we are. That's just a pet thing of mine, because not one other trade union, as far as we're aware in Britain, has sought to get employee-justified retirement ages. And you can do it under the legislation, you can still do it. What we've done is made it state pension age. We're not going to make somebody retire at 65 if the state pension age has gone up to 66 and a bit or something. But that's something we should do to create jobs for the younger end coming in. There's two ends to age spectrum. Just a little rant. Oh, and if I can plug something, a guy I've written some articles about, he was killed at Arama, he was top speedway rider, and Townsend Productions are putting a play on about him and Christopher Cordwell, the author and poet who died together in Spain, Arama. 80th anniversary in February, it's going all around the country, please support it.
Well, thank you very much.